Matthew chapter 2 is a story many of us have heard many times. Probably yearly, somewhere around Christmas time, we hear the story of the wise men going to see Jesus. It's kind of what you may consider it a basic element of the Advent story. And Advent, for those, I was an adult before I understood what Advent meant. It means the season leading up to Christmas. And somebody mentioned the Advent story, and I'm like, what's that? And they're like, you know, the story of Jesus. I was like, I know the story of Jesus. What's the Advent? That's a word we never used when I was growing up. But this is our Advent series of lessons leading up to Jesus. Jesus who left heaven to come here, to put on human flesh, to live among us, to teach us about life and love, what it really means to follow God and honor him and love one another, and then to become our sacrifice so that we could have an eternal hope. This is just one part of it. Let's read from Matthew chapter 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people, chief priests, teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child and his mother Mary, and they bowed and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with the gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. I want to break up the lesson this morning kind of into three sections. First, I want to go over some details and observations. And then I want to look at some musings and what ifs. And then some takeaways for us today. I want to start the details portion repeating something that I preached on December 18th, 2022. I'm sure you all remember that sermon. It was from Luke's gospel. And what I want to point out is that Luke's gospel and Matthew's gospel, the accounts of the birth of Jesus, agree on something that many people get wrong. This was my statement from then, and it still holds true. The most obvious thing from this text about the birth story of Christ that most people get wrong is that there is no record of an annoying little boy with a drum waking up Jesus. It's not in there. Thank you, Sammy. That was perfect. With that said, let's talk about Herod. Herod the Great. He reigned approximately 37 BC to 4 BC. It happens, this part of our story happens towards the end of his reign, several years before his death, which is mentioned in Matthew 2, verse 19. As Eddie mentioned a few weeks ago, Herod wasn't even completely Jewish. He had some Jewish background, but he was more of an Edomian from the Edomites. What we really, really need to understand about Herod was he was not a good guy. Maybe the fact that he wasn't really Jewish gave him reason to be paranoid about his kingdom. He was king of the Jews and he wasn't really Jewish. It has been recorded that he killed two of his own sons and one of his wives because he felt them a threat to his kingdom. He's also accused, credited, maybe be the right word, with the demise of some of his political allies. He would do anything he could to keep his throne, and yet he always seemed to be in fear of losing it. In the ancient world, it was not uncommon for signs in the heavens to signify a change in rulers. So for foreigners to show up and say, "We saw his star," would be incredibly troubling for Herod. And when this entourage shows up, he is greatly troubled or agitated or disturbed, depending on your translation. He has gone to great lengths to make sure he doesn't lose his kingdom, and he's not done yet. Interestingly enough, it's not just Herod that seems agitated or disrupted. It's all of Jerusalem. Verse 3 says, all of Jerusalem was troubled. Well, think about this. One, if Herod isn't happy, nobody's going to be happy. But the second thing that might be the possibility for recording this here is that all throughout the Gospel of Matthew, the religious leaders in Jerusalem are set against Jesus. They question, they complain, they accuse him relentlessly and eventually put him to death. Jerusalem here may be symbolic for the religious leaders in Jerusalem, which when you think about, if they have their own positions of power and a new king comes along, do they also feel threatened to lose their sense of power? Let's move on from Herod to the wise men, to the Magi. They came from the east, not as far east as the song says. They weren't three kings of Orient. They were Middle Eastern, just east of Israel. The Greek historian Herodotus describes them as a priestly caste of Medes from Persian, which would be modern day Iran, then would be known as Babylon. I found an amazing fact out about these Magi and about our congregation, because we have a direct descendant of these Magi here in our midst. As Keith Wise told us on Tuesday, that all of his male relatives have been wise guys or wise men. It's really weird though, because Keith does not look Middle Eastern. The Magi were advisors to kings. They were a hereditary group, like the Jewish priests being of the Levites. And so it was passed on through their families. They were astronomers and astrologers and even sorcerers practicing magic. We get our word magic from magi, magic and magician, as well as magistrate, because they advised the government and the kings. You may have heard of the code of the Magi, known in or described in Daniel three times as the law of the Medes and the Persians. Speaking of Daniel, if you remember, in Babylon invaded Israel in Jerusalem in 586 BC, and they take captives, including Daniel. And once Daniel is there, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he calls all the Magi together, and he says, "I want you to interpret my dream." And they're like, "Well, tell us the dream." And he goes, "No, no, no. If you're really the wise men you claim you are, you tell me the dream that I had and the interpretation. And if you don't, I will cut you into pieces and turn your houses to rubble." And none of them can. And their necks are on the line. And Daniel's like, "Hey, I got you. Because my God will give me the dream and the interpretation." And he does. And so Daniel tells the king his dream, tells the king his interpretation. The king is blown away and says, "Truly, your God is the one true God. You are now going to be in charge of the of the kingdom under me, as well as you're now in charge of the Magi. Daniel saves the Magi's neck by telling the dream, and is placed over them in Daniel 2:48. Maybe Daniel teaches them as he's over them. He doesn't just teach them the Jewish laws and the Jewish scriptures, the Jewish religion. Maybe he then teaches the Magi also about the coming king. We kind of stop reading Daniel at the end of chapter 6. Because 1 through 6 are all these crazy stories that we talk about with our children. The handwriting on the wall. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And Daniel in the lion's den. And then from 7 through 12 in Daniel, it gets into all these weird prophecies and dreams that we go, huh? But in the middle there are two messianic prophecies. In Daniel chapter 9, he prophesies about the anointed one to come. And in Daniel chapter 7, it says the Son of Man will be given an everlasting kingdom, and that the king coming would reign over all the earth. So maybe Daniel didn't just teach them the Jewish traditions, but also taught them about the coming Messiah. Here in Matthew, centuries later, their relatives come and ask, "Where is the one born King of the Jews?" They show up what is likely in a large entourage, not just a few, probably on Arabian horses more so than camels, and they come seeking the one born King of the Jews, bearing gifts. And they came because they saw his star. So what's up with the star? Remember, they were astronomers, and they say, "We have seen his star in the east." There are a lot of theories to what this was. Maybe it was a supernova, maybe it was a comet or a meteor or a conjunction of planets. Roman sources mention Halley's Comet in 12 BC. But that doesn't really fit the time frame. Chinese astronomers mention a supernova that would have been emitted light for about 70 days in 5 to 4 BC. But it would have taken the wise men more than 70 days to travel and get there. So the most likely, or what most astronomers think the best fit would be for what this event was in the sky, was a conjunction of planets coming together. That may be the best fit. And I say maybe, I'm not an astronomer, but all the astronomical, that's the word I'm looking for, all these astronomical explanations leave out the fact that this simply could have been a miracle from God without an astronomical explanation. We like to explain the things that we see in Scripture that don't make sense to us. We like to look for possibilities, and sometimes I think we almost explain away the miraculous. And maybe we don't need an explanation as to what stellar event this was. Maybe we just need to have faith that it happened the way the Bible says, and that God was behind it all. Also notice, they say, not a star, but we saw his star. Something unusual, something that set it apart, something noticeable. And these foreigners who knew that his birth was coming, these Gentiles who have traveled hundreds of miles to come and see, maybe it goes back to something Daniel had taught them. Maybe Daniel, when he was teaching the scriptures, pointed out Numbers 24:17, a star will come out of Jacob. Or Isaiah 9 and verse 2, that those in darkness have seen a great light. And again from Isaiah 60 and verse 3, Gentiles shall come to your light. Maybe Daniel taught them, and the Magi passed it down from one generation to the next. And so when this star appears, they're looking for it, and they say, "Let's go see the King of the Jews. However it happened, they were looking. They knew the prophecies, and when they saw the star, they rejoiced and headed to Jerusalem. And they came with a purpose to worship, and they came bearing gifts. These are gifts fit for a king. There's gold, and there's frankincense. But wait, there's myrrh. These are expensive and exotic gifts. They are not local to Jerusalem. Gold was used as a currency. It was incredibly expensive. Many of us, probably, I would say nearly all of us, have a piece of gold. Whether it's a ring or an earring or a necklace, this was not the case. Gold was very rare and very expensive. And the common everyday people did not have it. Frankincense is a fragrance from the East. It comes from a tree resin, which is only fragrant when crushed, which makes me wonder, how did they figure that one out? Frankincense is still used today as oil and fragrance. Myrrh was an aromatic fragrance also. It could be used as a painkiller, but one of its most oft use was a fragrance used for dead bodies, which is kind of a weird gift. Hey, you had a baby. Let me give you some death fragrance. Yet it may have been prophetic, because Jesus came for a reason. He came to show us how to truly live for God, but he also came to die in our place. So maybe this part of the gift was more prophetic than anything. Jeff Tyler said on Tuesday that the expense alone of these gifts would tell you there was more than three wise men. And I haven't made the point that was there's more than three wise men, because I feel like that point has been belabored. And I also had to leave a lot of stuff out. And you all ran late, and I started late. I want that noted for whoever's looking at the clock. But it was more likely a large entourage, because these gifts were incredibly expensive and they had great value, and you wouldn't travel with that kind of wealthy gift and not be able to protect that gift as you traveled. There were most likely more than three wise men. Three gifts, but more. A weird turn happens at the end of our story. The Magi are warned not to return to Herod in a dream. And it says they were warned, which tells me I don't have enough information here, because I want to know, was it one dream? Did all of them have a dream? Did all of them have the same dream? How did that conversation go? Who brought it up? Who was the first to go, I had this really strange dream last night? And how weird was it when the rest of them said, me too? Regardless of that conversation, they return via a different route. I want to turn to our musings part of this lesson. Speaking of the wise men, they came seeking Jesus, they followed the star, and it stopped over a house. How often do stars move, and how often do they stop? Just kind of a question. But can you imagine being a part of that group, traveling for months, maybe over a year? Can you imagine being... You get to Jerusalem, you talk to the king, he sends you on your way, you're in Bethlehem, you find it, the star has stopped. Who's going to knock on the door? You go knock on the door. Well, what am I going to say? Is there a baby here? Is there an infant toddling around? We saw this star and we think it's stopped over your house. What would have been like? Can you imagine the confusion on Mary's face? Can you imagine a group of foreign dignitaries, bowing down and worshiping a little child. What was Jesus' reaction? Was he just amused by their funny hats? Did he get annoyed when one of them pinched their cheeks or patted their head? What would have been like to be a part of the Magi that had these stories and prophecies passed down, and to see that star and to follow that star, and here you are in that moment standing before God's very Son? To be present in that moment would have been quite incredible. Have you ever had something so bizarre happen that you're talking about it in years to come, and you turn to somebody beside you and say, that really happened, right? I remember that, right? That, okay, all right. You wonder if Joseph ever had those thoughts. Like, I was asleep and I was dreaming and an angel showed up to me and said, this is okay. And like, that really, I mean, that's the way I remember it. There's nobody to ask because nobody was there with me. But an angel appeared to Mary too. We've talked about that. But did it really happen? Is this really okay? And then this group of traveling wise men knock on your door and worship your toddler. I think there's some affirmation there. I think there's some confirmation there. No, this really happened, and it's really okay. And this doesn't happen to normal toddlers. It's also interesting to me that at the beginning of Jesus' life, the beginning of his story, a Roman-appointed official acknowledges Jesus as King of the Jews. Now, Herod does this in a weird way. Herod doesn't want to worship. He wants to eliminate. But in Herod's reaction to the news, in a strange, weird way, Herod acknowledges that Jesus is the King of the Jews. And at the end of Jesus' physical life here, Pilate, a Roman-appointed official, acknowledges Jesus as King of the Jews. And the Jews are like, no. Right, he claimed it. And Pilate says, what I've written this. Jesus is the King of the Jews, both at the beginning and the end of his life. Roman officials acknowledge Jesus as King of the Jews. What if? Seriously think about what if here for just a moment. Stay with me. I didn't come up with this. I heard this theory and it just really blew me away. Because God that we serve is a God who does amazing, crazy things. I mentioned that Babylon invaded Jerusalem, taking them captive in 586 BC. They invade Jerusalem. They steal things from the temple. They take the captives, including Daniel. Daniel saves the Magi by telling the dream and the interpretation. Daniel is over the wise men, and Daniel teaches and passes things that he knows on to the wise men, to the Magi. And the Magi, in turn, pass it on from generation to generation. And what if? What if the Magi appreciate Daniel for saving their necks? And what if they start honoring God the Father, Daniel's God, because Daniel gives credit to God for giving him the ability to interpret and save their necks? And just as Nebuchadnezzar turns around and praises God, do the Magi then turn around and praise the God of Daniel, who is our God, God the Father? And what if some of those Magi are like, well, your God gave you the ability to do this, and when we went to Jerusalem, we stole gold from his temple. What if they secured some of that gold and they passed it down to generation to generation to generation and said, when this king comes back, you go find him. When the star appears, you take him this gold that we stole from his temple. What if? What if the gold they take Jesus was gold stolen from the temple? And the reason that that blew me away is that's something I could see God pulling off. Because God tends to work things out in our lives better than we could ever imagine. Now, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, that's the God we serve. That's the God we know. And it wouldn't surprise me if God worked this out. Now, I can't prove that that happened. But it wouldn't surprise me if God could use Israel's rebellion and an invading army to come in and steal gold and then use Daniel to have some of that set aside through the Magi to bless his son when he came into the world. Do we truly believe that God is for us? Do we really believe that God has a plan and that he can still work things for our good, that he still amazes today? Because that is who our God is. Two quick takeaways. There are two kings in this story. One king is known for cruelty and murder, for being insecure, for killing people who threaten his kingdom. And the other king will give his life for his subjects. One threatens and manipulates, the other loves. What kind of king do you want to live for? The Newsboys sang a song years ago, "You Are My King." And the lyrics of the chorus say, "Amazing love, how can it be that you, my king, would die for me? Amazing love, I know it's true. It's my joy to honor you." What kind of king dies for his people? Jesus is a king worth serving, who promises life and love and grace and mercy. He is a king who will die so that you can live, a king who extends the invitation to his eternal kingdom to everyone who believes in him. Jesus is a king worth seeking. Which brings me to my last point. Are you seeking Jesus? Are you looking for the Son of God to help guide you through this life? I've seen so many memes and titles of sermons that wise men still seek him. And that's true. Maybe you're new to seeking or following Jesus and you need to know more. Let me encourage you to keep seeking. Keep learning, keep looking, because Jesus is a king worth seeking. And if that's where you're at today and you want to learn more about Jesus, talk to anyone around you. Let them know your desire. We would love to help you get to know Jesus better. Maybe you've been asking, or maybe you've been seeking for a while, and today's the day you want to make him king of your life, to declare your faith and your allegiance to Jesus, your King, Lord, and Savior. And if that's where you are, let somebody know, and we would love to assist you in putting him on in baptism today, becoming your king. And maybe you're thinking, "Kevin, I've been seeking him most of my life. I'm good." Well, I'm glad you're good. But let me encourage you to keep seeking, to keep learning more and more about Jesus, to get to know him even better. There's another Newsboys song that says this: "To have found you and still be looking for you It's the soul's paradox of love. You fill my cup, I lift it up for more. I won't stop now that I'm free. I'll be chasing you like you chased me. It's a beautiful sound moving through the crowd, voices lifted up on high for you. It's a beautiful song we've only just begun to understand, rediscovering you. We get to keep seeking Jesus. We get to learn more and more. And the more I learn about him, there are some days it just seems that's the same old story. And then the more you dig and the more you see, the more you understand his love, the more incredible Jesus really is. And he is gracious to continue to reveal more and more and more of himself and his character and his love to us as we continue to seek. Keep seeking Jesus. He is a king worth seeking. Let's stand and pray together, and then the worship team will continue in prayer via song. Lord God, we thank you so much. I thank you so much for this church family. The encouragement we offer one another as we focus on you. And Lord, I'm thankful for this story about these wise men who seek your son. Lord, may we be wise. And may we be seeking. May we never stop seeking to know you better, so that we could live for you and that we could be a shining star to those in darkness still who don't know you. Help us to live a life that would show others your love and grace and mercy. Lord, I know there are heavy hearts here. And as we turn this over to the worship team, if you know of somebody around you that could use a prayer, I ask that you go do that. Go pray with them, gather around them, support them. Let's support one another as we continue seeking and ask God to allow us to do that.